countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal. Get Irish Country Living, your magazine for rural Ireland, every week inside the Irish Farmers Journal.
It's hard to believe, but next Wednesday is the fifth anniversary of that Brexit referendum. It seems like only yesterday, and also it seems like a lifetime ago. Now, the news headlines this week are all about sausage wars, political resignation, nations and leadership elections, reminding us of the destabilising impact on Northern Ireland of this political change. And indeed, we heard in the news there more of that overnight. Only one thing is sure. These are uncertain times. And this week, Suzanne Campbell has been taking a snapshot of the impact on farmers and food producers in the north. Suzanne, good morning to you.
Good morning to you. Yes, Damien, there's so much news coming out of the north so quickly at the moment. And sadly, it is centred around political instability. You know, Edwin Poots resigned there after just 21 days as leader of the DUP. And the north has this fabulous opportunity to sell into Europe, to sell into the Republic of Ireland, and potentially to sell to Britain seamlessly as well. But that's not working very well as the protocol is designed at the moment, particularly with goods coming from GB into Northern Ireland. Now, we've also seen the north hit by the pandemic. You know, shops and town centres, retail in footfall in 2020 has gone down by 20%. Prices of everything, just about everything in the north, have risen. Particularly affecting farmers are the three Fs: feed, fertiliser and fuel. To everyone I talked to this week, all of which have gone up in price. And both Brexit and the pandemic, of course, are blamed for this. Building materials are in short supply, as down here as well. Similar situation, more expensive if you're doing work on your farm. And also in the north, then, the UK-Australian trade deal, which has been heavily flagged, has also put farmers on edge, particularly in regard to sheep meat and beef coming in, you know, with lesser standards of production as it stands at the moment, into their main export market, which is the UK. Now, Aidan Connolly is the head of Northern Ireland's Retail Consortium, and I asked him how businesses are faring in particular, and especially which changes in the grace period coming to an end on July the 1st, where products coming into Northern Ireland and leaving will be subject to more checks and costs, and of course the potential bans on certain foods coming in from the UK, sausages being the notorious one.
Well, we have managed to keep things afloat. There were people at the start of the year who said Northern Ireland was starving. That wasn't true. There were people who were saying that it was absolutely perfect. That wasn't true. There's an average of 40,000 or 50,000 product lines in the average supermarket. There was only ever a few hundred missing. So Northern Ireland was never starving. And nor will we be if the ban on sausages comes in on the 1st of July. We have plenty of sausages here in Northern Ireland. I think it's to do with choice, though. There's going to be less choice. And it is a great sort of forebearer of what happens on the 1st of October. On the 1st of October, we have export health certificates. We have different checks comes in. Phyto certificates on plant matter. We've even got organic certificates on organic foods as well. All those are friction, all those are costly. And that's the real worry for us, that we won't be able to give the same affordability to Northern Ireland consumers who have half the discretionary income of Great British households.
Half the discretionary income, really?
Yeah, so that means after all your big bills are paid, your rent, your mortgage, and your electricity, we have here in Northern Ireland somewhere around about £118 left per week, whereas the average in the UK is somewhere around £215. So it means that we can't afford cost rises, but the retail industry can't afford it either. And we're very high volume, low profit margin. And that profit margin really has been eaten into over this past year with COVID, with some big players even seeing profit margins dipping under 1% at some stage.
Right. So it's a pretty tight situation. What about the voices saying, you know, this is an opportunity for Northern Ireland farmers, producers, manufacturers to sell more to Northern Ireland consumers?
It is realistic, and it's not just Northern Ireland consumers. You've got to remember that Northern Ireland businesses have free access to the UK market as well as the European market, over 600 million people to sell into. So The only problem then is that we still need to get those ingredients in from GB and from the rest of Europe. We still need to remove those frictions of goods that are coming from GB. That means that we need a veterinary agreement, which will remove those checks and that paperwork, those export health certificates, which are very costly. Or we need a trusted trader scheme with the Green Channel, which means that we are trusted. We give evidence to the EU of how things are made, how they're being shipped and where they're being sold. And that means that they trust us to move things without having those certificates and without having that friction and that cost.
Farmers are experiencing, of course, lots of difficulties moving seeds and livestock between the UK and the North. And this is only going to get worse once the grace period of the first 6 months ends on July the 1st, which is really around the corner. Victor Chestnut is president of the Ulster Farmers Union. He's also a beef and sheep farmer. And I asked him, again, if there are opportunities for Northern Irish farmers here to supply more of their own food domestically if prices are set to rise further on products coming in from the UK.
Yes, undoubtedly there's opportunities, but we are an exporting region. We export 85% of all the produce. The UK is our main market, so any difficulties between our market and their market doesn't help us. But look, it's the symbolism of these things that is causing the community tension. When somebody goes on online to buy something and it can't be delivered to Northern Ireland, when they go to take their pet to Scotland, which is part of the same country, the symbolism of these things is causing community unrest. And we all are concerned with the history we've had here in Ireland. And we don't want to go back there. And that's what annoys me so much as to why they can't sit down and try and sort these issues out. Because in many cases, they're no risk to the European single market. Farmers have got on well traditionally in the island of Ireland in the past. We have close links. The supply chain in the island of Ireland, the agri-food industry is completely integrated. 30% of our milk goes south for processing. A good number of our lambs go south for processing. A good number of the southern pigs come north for processing. The supply chain is completely integrated, and trying to rip that apart makes no sense at all. But we do think that one of the things in our milk, we want to be classed as produce of the island of Ireland, not as mixed origin. Mixed origin is not a label that adds value to anything. We need to work smartly around these and work together. I know we in the Ulster Farmers Union have a close relationship with the Irish Farmers Association, and we talk regularly. We can see the solutions, but the political will doesn't seem to be there from either the European side or indeed the UK side to find those solutions and make them work.
But is this idea of frictionless trade, you know, is it actually possible? Is it something that can be achieved by the Brussels and London civil services? You know, just beating things out, creating a better atmosphere, you know, creating a framework for trade that helps people to actually work it out on the ground. As farmers say, they can see the solutions. Why can't civil services do that? I talked to Vivian Gravey, lecturer in European politics at Queen's University Belfast, and asked her this.
I think there is work still definitely going on, both on the UK and the EU side, to try to kind of resolve issues around the implementation of the protocol. And I think Northern Ireland has a lot of quite small farms. And so, of course, I mean, that puts added pressure on these small farms, because the bigger groups have enough staff to make sure that their paperwork will be complete and all of this. But of course, then there's a question of like, what kind of farming do we want for Northern Ireland? Do we want a policy where only the big farmers can survive? Of course not. So I think that's where it's actually quite welcoming, I think, that we're seeing, you know, both sides, both the UK and the EU, listening to stakeholders in Northern Ireland with representation from the farming sectors about what they actually need in practice to make it work. Because of course, something that is negotiated and that could make complete legal sense, then you have to make it work in practice on the ground.
Do you think there is give way to that, that there are going to be exemptions to make these frictions easier for farmers to handle in the North?
I think we're starting to see a bit of a different language emerging from London. Requests instead of demands of Brussels, which in general we need to have. There's a lot of things that need to be hammered out in practice, and the protocol is a living document. You've got lots of different committees that can hammer this thing in practice and can also loop in the voice of stakeholders. But the problem is, if you've got a breakdown of trust between the UK and the EU is not going to want to bend over backwards for the UK, because we are talking about things that really matter for EU citizens, the quality of the food on their plate, the fact that they know it's safe to eat. And so they won't accept shortcuts on food standards.
That's Vivian Gravey, ending that report there from Suzanne Campbell.